شجاني وإن أدبرت ناداني وإن أقبلت أدناني وإن أحببت والاني.
Bismillahi r-Rahmani r-Rahim. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Salaam alaikum. Welcome again to another program. We are so happy you could join us. We are here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, and we have a very interesting topic to continue discussing this week. We want to talk about whether Muslims can help to improve social society in the West. Salaam alaikum to you, Sheikh
Ahmed. Walaikum salaam wa rahmatullah.
Welcome again to our program.
Thank you very much.
We've started to talk about this subject in a previous program, and there is so many areas that we can discuss that we would like to continue it again. We are talking about how Muslims can help to improve society, the social aspects of our community living here in a Western environment. And we want to talk about the area of women. How can Muslims help to improve the way that women are treated and women are viewed in a Western society? What is there in Islam that can help to give a better viewpoint of the role of women, the status of women, and how women should be treated?
Yeah. As you were mentioning before, you know, the teachings that Islam has about women, the almost restrictive aspect it has on women, the fact that there are so many hadith that from the Prophet that tell us how we should be careful in our relationship with women, how it is a mark of our spirituality, our iman, you know, how we deal with women. All of these things indicate that women, from an Islamic point of view, are considered to be holy, you see. Now, we were talking about in the past, in the last show, how, for example, there are Muslim men who oppress women, mm-hmm. you know. We talk about, for example, in the Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, how they, for example, treat, you know, contract workers and so forth, you know. And I think it has a direct relationship to the level of materialism, okay. you know, of the people who are carrying out these infringements upon the rights of women. When you look at the lower classes, for example, who are not as you know, involved in this materialism.
So you're saying that the rich tend to commit more crime against women
yes.
than the poor?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Now, they mightn't commit crimes against their own nationals, mm-hmm. okay? But among those women, Filipino and so forth, who are helpless, you see, you might find more of that type of an attitude, you know, that negative attitude. You see, with respect to, I would say, like, for example, restricting women from driving cars and so forth, you know, might not be an indication of a misogyny, you know, just a wrong interpretation of Islamic law.
Okay. What can Muslims in the West do to improve the status of women right here in this society?
I think most importantly that Muslims have to recognize that all women, okay, are holy or potentially holy. Yeah? So if they see a woman in, let's say, questionable dress, you know, or bad behavior, we look at people like this not with contempt, okay, not with a condemning eye, but as people who have been misguided, people who have the wrong understanding of themselves. Because if those women saw themselves as holy, you know, they would not be behaving the way they're behaving. You know, but we live in a society where holiness itself is destroyed. Mm-hmm. Huh? So people do not see themselves in a theoformic state. You know, they don't see themselves as godlike, you know, okay. in the quote unquote image of God. You see, mm-hmm. and this is what Islam could revive. You know, you'd be surprised that when Muslims start talking like this to people, you see, people sit up and pay attention.
It hits a nerve. It strikes a nerve or some sort of chord within them.
Exactly.
Something that they feel deep down, maybe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And when they are even more exposed to the dynamism of the relationship between men and women in Islam, for example, in the Islamic communities where they are, where you know, that exists among them,
right?
You know, they would even be more profoundly impressed, you know, mm-hmm. and be reminded of what they are.
So you're saying that Muslims and Islam can help to improve the dignity of women,
yes.
the dignity of human beings within the society.
That's right. And the respect men would have for women because of this dignity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we look at another area? What about the family in general?
Again, I mean, one of the things in the West, that we see in the West, is the breakdown of the family.
Mm-hmm.
On a number of different levels. One of them is, for example, defining the family in such a broad way, you know, that it includes almost everything, you know. So therefore, the concept of family doesn't have any meaning at all. When we talk about a definition, the classical meaning of a definition, okay, is a definition should include all aspects of that phenomenon that you define,
okay,
and exclude all phenomena that do not correspond to these aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So a definition is inclusive and specific to something and exclusive to those things that do not form part of that thing, right?
Okay.
It's exclusive. When you look at, for example, the definitions of the family, basically the family could involve a heterosexual family. It can involve a homosexual family. It can involve people who have no sexual relationship with each other, but decide to, let's say, take in children. You know, a family could be anything. Mm-hmm. All right, and therefore you do not have an exclusivist definition of family anymore. Okay, with that, it becomes very difficult to define roles in a family, okay, and responsibilities in a family, okay? The other thing is the family is breaking down with respect to respect between the young generation and the old generation, okay? The old generation are seen as, you know, manifesting an outdated lifestyle and outdated points of view. The young generation are respected or acknowledged for seeing a new and a different and contrary point of view. From the Islamic point of view, the aged, the parents, okay, are people who, by virtue of being parents, yeah, that is their existential
okay.
reality.
All right, you're yes. moving off to talk about dealing with relationships with old people.
Right.
The elders of the mm-hmm. family, basically. All right. But let's get back to the family itself, the family unit. How is that viewed in Islam?
The family unit is, like it was described in sociology, the basic unit of society.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the family unit that relationships in the Islamic community are replicated. For example, the father is the imam of the house, okay?
Or the spiritual head.
The spiritual head.
Okay.
The mother is the one who implements and brings the blessings into the family.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the father acts as the ruler.
Okay.
Okay. The mother acts as the source of rahmah for the family.
The source of mercy.
The source of mercy.
Okay.
Right?
The children?
And the children are the beneficiaries of this. On one level, they are trained, you know, to fulfill the Islamic functions, you know, as human beings in the society. You know, and one of the things that are largely emphasized in the society is the learning of Quran and how to pray.
Okay, so that's the basic unit, the family.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here and we'll be right back.
Ya Suri, Ya Suri, Ya Suri. from work and employment over the last few years, I've realized young Muslims have a real pressure to behave in a certain way, to shake hands or to hug a member of their staff, a member of their team. This is one of the many difficulties faced by young people, those who have entered the job market recently, because the Western ideals of gesturing, of welcoming each other, are so different to what we as Muslims find normal. This is just an example of many other fields, including that of family life and how popular culture is creating this gulf between what many religious people from all faiths accept as normal practice to that which is bombarded by the major state and media outlets. It's quite surprising that very many youth stars of Disney and Fox have now become so intertwined with more sexualized way of conducting themselves.
Muslim communities can definitely make an improvement towards the social role in Western countries, because Islam is a social code of life. It encourages Muslims to play an active role in society. You know, one way of developing a relationship with God, that vertical relationship, is the horizontal relationship by serving people. And religion is a force of good in society. It encourages people to serve others and to be selfless. That is the goal in serving God, in worshipping God. Doing things for the sake of God is a way which we can serve society, definitely.
And young girls are starting to want to have them as role models. So for me, we're still a long way away from combating all the dangers of this very promiscuous existence, of this culture of ease and hedonism. Instead, we should be trying to return to some of the roots which were inherent as early as 20, 30 years ago, before which there was this technological boom that impacted on all walks of life.
We need to educate society as well about the benefits of understanding each other. We need to support religious education, which at the moment is being marginalized in schools, and by all people working together, people of faith, people of no faith, sacres, teachers, training and helping, you know, train teachers. We can definitely improve on the dissemination of knowledge.
Welcome back. We're here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, and we're talking about the model of a Muslim family. Okay, you mentioned the model of the family before we went on the break. Okay, the father, the mother, and the children and their various roles. What more would you like to add concerning the Muslim family?
Well, the Muslim family is the place where children are trained. They're trained in terms of morals, or what is right and what is wrong. Okay. Out of that training, they develop discipline. They're trained in, for example, respecting and being part of the social hierarchy, where the hierarchy is based upon spirituality, it's based upon social power, benevolent and healthy social power, You know, it is based upon them knowing their place in society and how they could move up in society and the roles that they should play in society, or, you know, their role in keeping society safe, you see, their role in keeping society healthy. And so therefore, it's a place where they're encouraged to study, you know, not be distracted by a lot of frivolity. You know, this is the Muslim family. And I think the Muslim family, again, by its very you know, behavior, its very essence, you know, stands as an example for the non-Muslim family.
Okay, can you elaborate on that? In what ways is it an example?
Well, for example, you know, people seeing Muslim families as being successful, mm-hmm. right? People seeing Muslim families where children respect parents, you know, where this where children, you know, are disciplined.
But that also, the respect for parents exists in other societies as well.
There's no doubt.
It's not something that is exclusive to Islam.
There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would Muslims have a greater role to play in? Why is that not a part of the society? Why are you mentioning that? Is that not a part of the society
today? It's actually being weakened. Mm-hmm. It's actually being weakened. Okay. And yes, it's true. Not just Muslims could play a role in promoting this, in promoting healthy families, but non-Muslims as well, like, you know, maybe Buddhist cultures, Hindu cultures, Jewish cultures, and so forth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about here is the Muslim community consciously, you see, trying to be a reforming and improving model for society. And yes, these other societies can do that as well.
Yes. So you're saying that society needs improving in this area.
Yes.
Okay. Why is that?
Because how we see it now, the statistics, the news,
okay,
you know, always point to the degeneration of society, especially among the lower elements of society.
What do you mean by the lower elements?
The unemployed, mm-hmm. you know, racial groups that are marginalized in the society. You know, you find that the non-Muslim racial groups, for example, and lower economic groups, they tend to have more fragile families. Yeah,
I see. Okay. Now, what are the drawbacks to Muslims carrying out this reforming role in society?
I think there are many, many drawbacks. And because of this, you find that Muslims are not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think a lot of Muslims tend to see themselves in a kind of a standoffish fashion. Okay? You know, sort of we are better than them. You know, and we want to protect ourselves from them. And they do not see themselves as it being their calling to change or to improve them. Because from the point of view of the fact that we both live in the same society, you know, and when one aspect of the society, one part of the society, if it gets diseased, it will affect our side of the society, you know, or if it becomes unbalanced, it will unbalance our aspect of the society. For example, our kids would have to go to school with their kids,
mm-hmm.
you see? And their kids might, if their numbers are greater in school, they will influence our kids, you see? So this is one of the problems I think Muslims have. They have too much of a us-them type of a mentality rather than an us mentality, you see?
We're in it together.
We're in it together, you know? Related to this, I think the Muslim community still tends to see itself as an ethnic group or ethnic groupings, much more concerned about preserving cultural forms that are peculiar to their group, you know, as opposed to seeing Islam as something rooted in their environment and their new experience. See, so this creates a communication gap between Muslims and non-Muslims.
They don't see Islam as something that could take root here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, and the only root they want it to take is among their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think also in terms of the media. You know, the Muslim media is still very much undeveloped or underdeveloped, and it, you know, any aspect of the media tends to many times spend a lot of energy into sectarian type of rhetoric and presentations, or ritualistic things, or again, programming that are just for Muslims, that use the various terminologies and so on that are peculiar to Muslims. And I'm not taking into question the necessity for programming that would involve the other communities to bring their interests, you know. And so, again, it kind of keeps Muslims marginalized in the society and less effectual.
Okay, so what is the future, do you think, of the family in a Western environment? An environment where there are Muslims and there are non-Muslims.
The Western family?
The Western family.
The non-Muslim Western family?
The family as an idea, the family as a unit, as a model. What is the future of that? What's the future of the Islamic family?
Well, the family as a model is, I think, if we think of the model, okay, as the heterosexual nuclear and extended family, where you have defined or clarified roles for different people in the family, this is in danger of changing, and it's in danger of changing because it's becoming to dominate the new non-defined forms. Are coming to dominate discourse in the media and being sort of like prevalent in the public mind, mm-hmm. Okay? Where there's now a value attached to, supporting this idea. You know, where people now stand up and are proud to say, for example, that, you know, I believe in a family that is of a different type, for example.
The Islamic view of the family, is that in danger then?
Well, it's in danger on a secondary level, okay? To the extent that Muslims living in this environment, mm-hmm. if they do not have any input in the discourse, okay. Right? Or if they don't put forward their own discourse in their own media, mm-hmm. They also are in danger of being overwhelmed.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Indeed, it's absolutely essential for the Muslims to have not just any role in the Western society, but to have a pivotal role in the society that they are in. It's important for them to be not just any member of the society, but to be an active member of the society. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in his message, in his letter to Malik Ashtar, when he sent him as a governor to Egypt, he would say, "Oh Malik, people are of two kinds. Either they are your brother in faith, imma akhun laka fi ad-din, aw nadhirun laka fi al-khalq, or they are your equal in humanity." So when we are here in the society that we are in, not just we need to look at others as different people from us, rather, the very least, they are my equal. And I need to take care of my neighbor. I need to know the roles and responsibilities and the rights of my neighbor, the rights of my community, how I can actively propagate the message of Islam, the message of peace, the message of tranquility, the message of solely dedicating oneself towards their Lord, towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even more, we notice that the Holy Prophet himself, when he would send his companions, his messengers towards the Far East, for example, he would mention to them, go seek knowledge even if it's in China. أَطْلَبُ الْعِلْمُ وَلَوْ كَانَ فِي الصِّينِ. The importance of, even if it means that you have to go further away from your own homeland and you need to seek education, then go and seek education there. So a Muslim in the West should not just live and sleep and ideally sit down at home. Rather, needs to be active, needs to be working hard. And in that way, they will be the best مُبَلِّغِين. For Imam al-Sadiq says, كُونُوا دُعَاتًا لَنَا بِغَيْرِ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ. Invite others to the way of Islam without your tongue. And how is that? With our good akhlaq, with the way we conduct with others, our manners, the way others look at us and say, wow, what a good Muslim, what a true Muslim, what a peaceful man and woman I can see, members and representatives of Islam and the best of Muslims in today's world. ويشد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أقرب تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويشد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أقرب تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويشد الطير في
Welcome back, Sheikh Ahmed Hanif. We've been talking about the status of women and also about the family. Can you tell us, or can we discuss for a bit also about the how people view themselves in the West? How do people measure themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about that, and how is that in any danger?
Mm.
And what can Muslims do to help people to have a more wholesome view of themselves and their role in society?
Right. The most prominent or the key element in a Muslim self-consciousness, Muslim social self-consciousness, is that he or she is part of the Ummah, okay? It's part of the society. So a Muslim sees him or herself as a member of a family, as a member of a tribe or a clan, or as a member of a nation or a people, okay? And as a member of the wider Muslim Ummah that holds all peoples, all tribes, all clans.
Is that the extent to which it goes? What about as a human being?
As an individual.
As a member, as a representative of God?
Well, yes. But I'm talking about on an immediate level.
Okay.
Okay. As a representative of God is more like spiritual, if you know what I mean. It's more esoteric, right? And so, for example, for the Muslim, in many decisions that they make, right, it is very, very important family reaction or family point of view. And so you find a Muslim, for example, will never marry someone, even though they might be head over heels in love with them, okay, if their family disapproves, right? Or a Muslim might find it very, very difficult to shift location, to move from one town to another town, or one country to another country, because your mother doesn't approve of it, doesn't like it, might be upset about it, okay? So this is how a Muslim operates. Their consciousness is very much social, Their individualism or their individuality, it exists, but it is subject to this, not vice versa. In the West, it's different. The individualism is primary. Society is secondary. And so society, the individual expects society to conform to him, not him conform to society. Mm-hmm. You see? And so therefore you find society not being stable. It tends to follow the crowd. What the individual wants is other people to be like him or her. And so they attract others to themselves by gimmicks almost, you know, by a different type of dress, a way of life, you know, how they conduct themselves in certain ways, what language or slang they use, etc., etc. Okay? And so the individual now becomes the pole of a society based on something very, very transient. And then society tends to follow upon them. What you're left with is inconsistency, is an absolute relativization of values. You know, you find people on the bus, they would be swearing like sailors, you know, but people not feeling that they have the right.
Let's not give sailors a bad name.
You know, people not feeling that they have the right to criticize them, okay? Because from their point of view, they might be doing something wrong, you know, and that type of a thing. And people suffer because of this. Okay? People suffer because of this. People suffer the malaise of not being, of being disconnected, right? Of not feeling themselves having any worth, you know, or any role to play in the society. And this is very dangerous because this can lead to despotism. This can lead to fascism. You know, I know exactly what you're finding out right now is a greater and greater separation of government from the people. Government being concerned with its own selfish interests, right? And the people as the victims, right? Or the sources by which these selfish interests could be maintained.
So how does that lead to despotism then?
Well, when people are disconnected, when people feel powerless, when people are reluctant to stand up, what you find is that people who are cruel, who have negative types of ways of thinking, you know, could be free to seize power.
I see.
You know, and rule over these people. There's a very interesting statement by Imam Ali alayhi salam that says, if you do not do exalting the right and forgiving the wrong, amr bil ma'ruf wa nahy anil munkar,
and forbidding the wrong.
And forbidding the wrong, okay? People will have despots rule over them.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. So how does that relate to the Muslim the Western society and the Muslims in the society?
Well, Muslims in general tend to be people where the rule of exalting the right and forbidding the wrong is still very much alive. Mm-hmm. You know, from the point of view of trying to correct somebody in terms of how they're making their prayer, you know, mm-hmm. to how they relate to their brother and sister, to how they relate to their mother and father, you know what I mean, to how they relate to business. You know, Islamic rules are so clear that we can exhort each other to do the right and forbid the wrong.
Okay, so how can Muslims use this then to improve society, to reform society?
Okay, by Muslims taking an active role in opposing and struggling against those negative things in society that other people don't find themselves struggling against.
And are Muslims doing that today?
Muslims are doing that today. You know, they're not doing this as as a whole. You know, not everybody does that. But there are Muslim groups that do this. And I think also in their personal lives, Muslims do it to one extent or the other.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, for example, in the 1970s, you know, in the United States of America, Muslims were very, very much involved in fighting against racism, for example, 60s and 70s, fighting against racism, for example. Muslims had been very much involved in, you know, fighting against, you know, the drug trade in neighborhoods and so forth.
Our time is almost up. Can you tell us then, how can this be used now to improve our society, a Western society?
I think if Muslims, in their centers, their leaders and so on, are encouraged to think of themselves as part of the wider society, encouraged to think of Islam as a gift that God has sent for all mankind, encouraged to think of themselves as ambassadors for Islam and supporters of social reform, you know, I think Muslims can do quite a lot in improving Western society.
Thank you very much. There you have it. We've been here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, and we hope you've enjoyed our program and you'll join us again next time. Bye for now.